This week, I am speaking to Max Jones from SSG about how to start your own recruitment agency. And it's a long one, so I won't do too much of an introduction. There's a lot of information in this one, so I hope you enjoy. Take care. It's Max Jones, everyone.
Hello. Hold the applause.
I don't know when to put an applause in these things.
You're gonna have to edit my one in, yeah. Because unfortunately, yeah. Even if there was an audience, they probably wouldn't. They'd probably be like, Who's that guy? No, there.
My last podcast, the audience was my wife coming in with a cup of coffee halfway through. So
yes, I'm recording.
Yeah,
leave.
I need a red light outside the office. That's what
you do. I think you know you've done a couple of these now, so I think you warrant that. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm there now. I'm radio quality now. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
So, Max, let's tell the listeners who you are, what you do.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So, my name's Max Jones. I am one of the investment team here at a company called We Are SSG, basically SSG. So, really, my objective with SSG is to go out there and find recruiters who are actively looking to start their own recruitment companies and work for themselves. And basically in talking to them and understanding a little bit more about fundamentally what they're looking to do and what, if any support they feel they're going to need to help them do that, yeah. I would then see if perhaps SSG would be the right model to help them start their own business and obviously support it. So I guess going back one step, SSG are essentially a recruitment incubation company. So basically we offer a free business launch and ongoing support service in exchange for a descending percentage of billings within the new recruitment company.
Yeah.
So essentially, it's as sales as that can sound, essentially it's a one-stop shop, or we hope to kind of create this one-stop shop for our guys so that they can focus on the out-and-out recruitment while entrusting in this organization to help them in all the other areas.
You're the vehicle to help these people get out there and achieve what they want to achieve. That's
yes. So what you've said in 10 words is exactly what I just said. Yeah, maybe you should do my job.
I might just do it.
You might just do it. Yeah.
But yeah. The reason I wanted you on this podcast, and you're definitely in the top few people that I wanted in this podcast, was mostly around, because the podcast is all about people. It's starting with them and the self-realization in themselves, whatever that might be. I had a phenomenal chat with Charlotte yesterday about the pursuit of her happiness and her self-realization with it. But with yourself, because the experience you guys have had, and especially with myself, because I work with you guys as well, is that self-realization for people that want to start a business or start something, and kind of how they go about mentally preparing themselves, let alone physically preparing themselves in their endeavors and what they do. I guess what I think some listeners will probably want to hear from your experience, what are the type of people that come to you? What are the type of people that want to start a business? Mental people or just
crazy people? Yeah, you spend most of your time trying to talk people out of it. I think over the years it's become pretty clear that there are key kind of traits that kind of gear predominantly off people's motivations, and it's always, as you quite rightly said about SSG being a vehicle, really the best way to describe whether someone feels really ready to do something for themselves is that they view this vehicle, which just so happens to be their own business, as just a vehicle to get them to wherever it is they want to get to over the next 5-10 years of their own personal life alongside their family. So I guess in terms of kind of the mentalities, obviously the cliche strong, confident. I think self-awareness is one of the biggest ones, in terms of a lot of people think they should start their own business, and you know the difference between people who actually think they should and people who really should is obviously quite different, if that makes sense.
I think it's a gap between them both. I really do.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I think what's fascinating about the conversations that I tend to have with our guys is you kind of see that journey. You see people who come on the phone thinking that they do want to. You have 45 minutes to an hour talking about the ins and outs and really delving into what they fundamentally want right now from their career. And sometimes it isn't starting something for themselves. Sometimes it might be just the environment that they're in, which is causing them to feel the way they feel, if that makes sense.
Do you find that the people that you speak to, is it's not actually they need to start a business. They probably need to change jobs first. That might be the.
I think you obviously, you know, you get people who are very much professionally and personally ready, and those types of conversations go a certain way. And Equally, you have people who are kind of personally ready, but might not professionally be there right now, and they know that as well. They just want to start having the conversation about it, knowing that maybe it's something that they're going to do in 2, 3, 4 years time, and those are the really interesting ones, because you then see that journey over the next couple of years, and then you're having a similar conversation, but they just feel ready for whatever that word.
I remember I started speaking to Claire about 3 years before I started my business, and having that conversation with her over time. Claire, by the way, to the listeners, is your boss, Brad?
Is. she'll love that. Yeah, no, she is, yeah.
Is your boss. And she guided me through the thought process. And I felt for her, because I felt like I was wasting their time for a period of time. But that's not true, is it? That doesn't waste your time, is it?
Not at all. And it is one of those things, if you can just imagine the nature of what you obviously went through, the nature of the conversations that you're very fortunate enough to have with these individuals. It's certainly not a conversation that you would expect to have on the Thursday and they'll be starting their own business the next Wednesday. You know, this is a very long-term thing, and it's all about, in those early stage conversations, really delving into personally what I find so interesting, which is understanding people's whys about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which I guess then, you know, the way that I say it is naturally, obviously, I need to know that to ensure that SSG are the right vehicle to help you do it. Yeah. But the more selfish reason is that I genuinely want to know why these guys want to do it, or why these individuals think they want to do it. And that's where you get those common traits. Yeah.
Is that, I guess that's probably a good thing to get into, actually, is the why. What are the most common whys you hear? What are the things that people come up with?
Yeah, so I think everyone has their own kind of unique whys, but fundamentally they boil down to one of a couple of things, as I'm sure you can imagine, and I'm sure you can identify in yourself. And the beauty of your business over the years, I'm sure that why has changed a little bit as well.
I think my life's changed about 5 times in the last week.
No. So in the last, just because you're just fickle there, Mark. I think that's a huge problem.
That's a big problem. No, I'm only kidding. No, it has. It's evolved. It's evolved.
Oh, no, absolutely. But the fundamentals are still there. So I guess going back to your question, naturally one of the obvious ones is the financials. It certainly is. Mm-hmm. I think to some degree, everyone is financially motivated to do this for themselves, whether that be a product of obviously the majority of people, if you go back as to why they got into recruitment in the first place, it was probably financially driven, which is absolutely fine. I think, again, this is where I really like to delve into it and probably annoy a lot of the individuals that I talk to as well, is I want to kind of understand what more money, for want of a better word, is going to really bring them. Because I think that's one of those conversations that I do find myself having quite a lot, in terms of a lot of people want to do this because they just want to earn a little bit more money, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And when you distill it down, the irony is, obviously, if it's just a little bit more money, then that might just be the vehicle that you're in at the moment, rather than you want to start something for yourself, because you could get more money going to another agency, getting a better basic, a better commission scheme, and away you go. You'll have that more money.
Yeah.
So I think when you look at kind of people's financial motivations, it goes a little bit deeper than that, in terms of actually it tends to be kind of twofold. They either view money as just a very positive byproduct of doing what they're doing, which is obviously the recruitment side of things, or they're motivated by key milestones in their lives over the next couple of years, whether that be they want the money to buy a house, they're going to start a family in 5 years, therefore they want that money to enable them to do XYZ or whatever it might be. So the first one that you always see in some guys, obviously, is the financials. The other one, which I'm sure you felt as well, is probably the autonomy. I'd probably say that's quite a big one. And I think it's quite an interesting one as well, because I'm sure you've felt it over the years as well. Recruitment is quite an autonomous environment, if depending on what agency you're in, obviously. So it can kind of have two ways of looking at autonomy. You're either lacking the autonomy in your current place, therefore want to do something for yourself to achieve that autonomy that you know you want and you know will make you better, for want of a better word, whether that be personally or professionally or both. Or you have so much autonomy where you are, i.e. in your current employment, that you're actually thinking, well, there's not much difference for me just to simply be doing this for myself.
Yeah.
And I guess, obviously, you've been through that process. Was that quite an important part of what you did?
Oh, my God. But I'll start with my why, then I'll answer that question, because I think that's...
Because
I think to link it to anyone else that has a very similar why, for me, it was always a want to do. I always wanted to own my own business. Especially from day one, I started in recruitment in 2005. I remember asking Brian, who sat next to me, who's been in recruitment 30 years, saying to me, I asked him, how do you start a recruitment business? And he actually told me how to start, because he'd done one himself. And ever since then, it grew and grew and
you
grew.
Said.
Yeah, it absolutely grew inside me for years. But I needed an apprenticeship to understand how to run a business, how to do recruitment. And that was my career to up until the point I started my own business. Mm-hmm. But the why then changed to, I know when you work for recruitment companies, that autonomy part of the job, you're regulated with KPIs, you've got stupid targets, you've got overbearing managers, you've got all the issues. And there were times, don't get me wrong, there's times where I really enjoyed working for Reed. Is one of my favorite times of my career. And you kind of, I'll take that with me, I'll take that experience with me, and I'll adapt that for what I need to do. And then when you get into it and you start your business, autonomy is really it's self-discipline, then it turns into, I think that's the right word, self-discipline.
Yeah.
And I straight after this conversation, I've got about 6 jobs now I need to get advertised, and that's probably gonna take me the rest of the freaking day to write and advertise.
It's because this will take 4 hours, but yeah, go on.
You know what I mean?
No.
And you kind of think, right, is that autonomy or is that doing you? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I've got control. No, I have to do this thing. There's 99% of things you do, you have to do. That 1% of autonomy, you can leave, 1 o'clock on a Friday if you want to, or you can pick up an hour if you wanted to. It's really up to you. But you've got to have self-control with that autonomy. And I think that was a realization at the beginning. Does that make sense?
No, it certainly does. And, it's interesting because it then crops up. I mean, there's a couple of points in there anyway, but it then crops up that kind of, what people are really hoping to do. A lot of individuals cite kind of work-life balance. So work-life balance is one of those things that people chuck around all the time. And I think it's kind of the wrong way to look at it. I think the easiest way to kind of look at what this autonomy and the freedom and the financials kind of brings people is kind of work-life integration, because it's not the fact that you absolutely know there is absolutely no one going to be on your back if you, after this conversation, swanned off, did nothing for the rest of the week and kind of put your feet up. But obviously that's not why you did what you did.
But my mortgage company would be, or maybe on my back.
Yeah.
If I did that.
Yes, they would. Yeah. And, probably your wife would be as well. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
Well, she won't know for it until the mortgage company. But that's a different story. No, I'm only kidding. No, but that's true. And that again, I was aware of that work-life integration at the beginning. I was certainly aware of it from watching TED Talks or listening to people talk on blogs and stuff like that. Not listening to people's blogs, reading blogs about it. And you don't realize that until you're standing in the queue in Asda speaking to a client, talking about an interview feedback, and you don't want to let that go, but you're checking out with the woman in front of you, and you want to be professional as you possibly can. She obviously can hear things beeping in the background. And that was that realization for me. True story, that, by the way. And that's when I realized. It was about 4 weeks into doing, to starting up a business. And I went, this is going to, my life and my job are now one thing. I am my job.
But that's because that's why it's so important to understand that you genuinely want to do it. And I know it sounds so obvious. And I think what's interesting about yourself is, you kind of realized quite early on in your career that you wanted to do it. And I think that goes back to what I was saying at the beginning in terms of people being kind of professionally and personally ready to do something like this. And the irony being people tend to be personally ready, i.e. they just want to do it, they know they want to do it at some stage before professionally having the right skill set, for want of a better word, to do it. And I guess it's also those kind of push and pull factors in terms of why you're really doing it.
This is a random question I just thought of just then. What about the people who are just starting up in anger? Do you know the ones I'm on about where they've really had enough of the company they're working for and they just want to steal the clients and go and do it themselves and stick the middle finger up to that company? Have you come across those guys?
Not the stealing the clients within restricted periods, because obviously that's illegal. But
coffee legal.
Absolutely. And I think it raises quite an interesting point that obviously is always banded around in terms of those push and those pull factors, because you would think that the more, for want of a better word, successful people that we've supported, that have started something for themselves over the years, have been pulled to do it rather than just being pissed off at where they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know for a fact that there's a couple that we're very fortunate to support right now that we have done for years, that it was out of frustration and anger. And the fact that, you know, there have been a couple of internal changes and that's kind of sparked things that they already kind of knew. So you could argue that it is the anger that finally pushes them.
Yeah.
But equally, you would argue that they've had to have wanted to do something for themselves in some guise to be pushed to that, because a lot of people just wouldn't.
It's an epiphany almost, isn't it? That anger creates an epiphany. What the freaking hell am I doing this here for?
Oh, yeah.
And it's
a switch.
It's a
switch.
And that's, as a business owner, if I was employing staff, and I'm, you know, especially working with you guys and starting my own business, I'm more than aware now of that switch and what it looks like. As a business owner, you need to be aware that your top guy, or even the middle guy, or even the guy you just employed, could just switch on one day and go, oh yeah, this is easy, I'm going to do this myself, and disappear and take the business with you, with them. So it's scary times for some people.
Which is sometimes why, you know, we always have, so that's happened to us over the years. So we'll have individuals that we're supporting who have built a team underneath them, and then one of their individuals will leave and start something themselves. And the anger that individual feels is understandable, but obviously you let them have their time. But then you also say, it's exactly the same as when you did it for yourself. So, you know, you can't be angry at an individual for just having that switch and thinking, actually, this is exactly where you were 6 years ago.
Yeah, but that's, and I was just going to actually add to that, the fear for me is that, but you've got to realize as well, you've just trained someone and created something that they can go and do it themselves. So you've actually made yourself redundant. That's a good leader. That's a good manager, by the way.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. You then just got to treat them well and hope they stay. It's kind of like, you know, in any organization, in any profession, anything, you'll get those individuals that, you know, there's a time limit on that individual.
So if you don't, you don't want that to happen, then you need to change your management structure. You need to change the methodology of managing that person. You need to flip from being a manager to a consultant with them and work with them and develop them. And if they do say, hey, I want to go, maybe chuck them some money and go and set up with them. You know what I mean? Do it with them or something. Or
I mean, so you know, coincidentally, we've had that as well. You know, we've had that quite recently. So one company that we've been supporting for 4 or 5 years now, one of their consultants works an area that they didn't really work until that individual came on.
Right.
And then they, a couple of months ago, said, fancy doing this on my own. And that individual, because of the autonomy and the flexibility that they've got, has said, okay, yeah, go do it, but I'll invest, I'll help you, and I'll retain, you know, 50% of your billings or 30 or whatever it might be. And then you have them for a couple more years.
Yeah,
which then goes back to kind of that autonomy in terms of, it's that personal autonomy, but also that professional autonomy that,
yeah,
as I'm sure you felt, once that switch goes, it's not a matter of, oh, I might do this for myself. It's just making sure that you figure out the best logistics to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said about autonomy, it switches to self-discipline straight away when you start your business. The autonomy bit is quite funny when you actually get it. You do have full autonomy of your day-to-day and what you do, but you now need to bring in this almost ninja-like self-discipline.
It's the structure, isn't it? Has your structure changed over the last couple of years, or has it always kept quite consistent?
It's when you say kept quite consistent, my structure has been, how can I put it, mutated with what I do.
Yeah.
So I don't sit here in the morning and go, right, I need to do 10 before 10. I don't do that. I although my BD is a trickle daily, my BD is I can go into this in another podcast, but it's not like I've got a power hours. I do not do any of that type of stuff. But I still get this flow of vacancies coming in from what I do on social media, what I do on mailers, what I do speaking to old and new clients and so forth. But I don't do that for, I do 2-3 of those calls a day, and it just keeps that nice little trickle. So that structure is still there. But then if I get a fantastic job come in, I'm spending 3 days on that sucker. And I live and breathe that job for 3 days. It's strange. At the beginning, I was still doing it like I was working for someone. And then I think about year two was an extraordinary year. Year two was busy as hell as well, year two. I realized, what am I doing? I could do it this way. I don't need to do that anymore. I don't need to track that KPI. The most important KPIs to me are interviews. So I just go after interviews. And so it became more of a focus per job, if you know what I mean, than an actual structure of broadness that I need to do this. I've got to do this.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And again, from a completely selfish point of view, why I genuinely love what I do is the fact that you talk to individuals on day one, or obviously months, if not years, before they start something for themselves, and they have all these ideas and all these kind of motivations and all these visions for what they want to do. You then go through that process with them. You then get to that launch day, that day one, and then you're fortunate enough to see them over the next couple of years either do exactly what they say they were going to do, which is great, or it changes into something else, and you realize that no matter what you say at the beginning, at the end of the day, it's all going to change anyway.
I agree. And that, I said this to Charlotte on the last podcast, which has just come out. If anyone wants to listen. I said to her that your business plan mutates. And if you review it every few months and adapt it, add to it, take it, even screw it up and put it in the bin and start again. If you have to do that. Because there is no set process you have to follow when you're doing it yourself. A lot of it's would you agree with this? A lot of it's gut feeling, isn't it? It is a lot of gut feeling.
I think the strategy, for want of a better word, that we've adopted over the years, that I've obviously just adopted over the last four and a bit, or however long it's been, is the fact that these business plans don't really mean anything. It's great to put something down on paper if you want to, and to get some clarity on what you might want to do. But at the end of the day, on day one, the most important thing is to make a placement. And then once you made that first placement, the most important thing is to make the second placement, and then the third. And then if you can navigate your way through, this is what I always say to our guys, if you can navigate your way through that first year and kind of, you know, make those placements, absolutely, but also deal with all the other noise, for want of a better word, that goes with running something for yourself, you then can sit there at the end of that year one and say, right, what do I really now want from this business? And that's an enjoyable process as well.
Do you know the one plan I had to stick to throughout the entire first year that was a must? I had to do it. Was my own personal and family budget. So my finances, my personal and family finances. And that was the most rigid structure I've ever had in my life. Because normally when you got a job, you're earning 25, 35, 40 grand a year, wherever it is. You're just chucking money in a bank account and hope that all the bills get paid. But when you're self-employed and the money's coming from somewhere else, and it's not coming from the business, but it's coming from a loan, or it's coming from a friend, and you're going to pay them, you know what I mean, that type of thing. You've got to stick to this structure, this absolute rigid structure. And that's the only plan I had in the first year, believe it or not. That was the only.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's not funny, is it? Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, again, that you need to be aware of. You know, it's kind of one of those things that my job, and also, you know, the job of everyone here at SSG, is to paint this picture that this is going to be the hardest thing you do. So no matter how much you feel prepared, for want of a better word, for it, you know, when you actually start doing it, it can be incredibly tough. Of course it can. And I guess that's why, unfortunately, it doesn't work out for some people, because they underestimate that. And I think one of the biggest areas is they underestimate those personal finances.
I would say that's number one for everyone I've spoken to, especially people that have come to me. Oh, you started a business, tell me all about it. And then I'd say, you know, have you got your finances in order?
This is it. Yeah.
And that is everyone's fear. Everyone's fear is paying their bills when they start a business. There's a weird moment, though, isn't it? That moment where they're talking to you to the moment they start to day one, they start their business. There's this massive chasm between that and that leap of faith they've got to take, isn't it? Have you seen that in people's eyes where they do that?
I think it's because I do it every single day. So you live and breathe it, and it's really one of those environments, much like all the guys that work at SSG, you live and breathe what you do.
Yeah.
So you kind of sometimes have to check yourself and say, remember what you're actually talking to people about. You know, this isn't just a move to a certain job up the road that, you know, they're going to earn X, Y, Z, and it's going to be fine. This is not only a professional change, but obviously a massive personal change for these individuals. So yeah. I think where I've had to obviously identify and obviously work on over the years as well is kind of that empathy to kind of appreciate that, you know, this is a massive thing that you're asking people to, that you're facilitating someone to do. So I certainly see it, and we have over the years, obviously, when you talk to people, it might be one thing. When they come in for a meeting and they're sitting next to you, opposite you, and they're talking about factoring or back office or websites or the legal side of things or how this might look, you see in people's eyes that it might not be a thing for them. You definitely see that change, which is where everyone has to go with their gut and say, nah, this isn't right, is it really? But it's an incredibly, but equally, it's the best thing is, you know, you'll talk to these guys for ages. They'll come into launch. You'll obviously see them on the launch day because obviously it's in SSG. So, you know, I'm far too nosy not to put my head in. And then obviously then you just talk to them all the time. And that shift is so, so noticeable in terms of it might just be overnight or it might take a couple of months, but you know, you would hope that they're so much happier in what they do.
Yeah. I think, and then I've spoken to people that have started and they're not happy, but that's a different story. I speak to Charlotte about that one. It's a great podcast. No, I'm joking.
just released, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, don't listen to this podcast. Just hit X on this one.
I'm okay. I had an extraordinary question then. Oh, that was it. The type of person, I know we talk about the kind of the mentality of the types of people, but do you find that the type of person, because the ones that come to me and ask me these questions have families, and they are asking me about kind of how did I do it? Because I've got a little one and a wife and how do we do it? Are you finding that there's more, and sorry if this insults any of the listeners, more single people, more married people, more people that are cohabitating, you know, are you finding that?
I know what I mean, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a demographic.
Yeah. There's the word. Yeah, there's the PC word for it. Yeah, no. No, yeah, you've gone through everything else, but there you go. Yeah, you can edit that out. It's fine. No, but you tend to get, I'm going to sit on the fence, you tend to get quite a good little mix.
That's what
I'm trying to do. I think you certainly do get a mix of individuals, and what they then want to achieve from it is obvious given where they are personally. I think you certainly do talk to your single living, you know, either moving back in with their parents because obviously they want to squirrel some money away, or, you know, renting, minimal overheads. And those motivations are, look, if I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to do something for myself, I want to do it when I haven't got a mortgage, when I haven't got kids, when I haven't got another half, when I haven't got all these responsibilities that I know I'm going to have in 5-10 years time. Yeah. And that's great because obviously you can completely see why they would do it.
Yeah.
You then have the types that are married or have just got married and they think, what am I actually now going to do? Or they might have a little one on the way and that acts as a little bit of a catalyst. You have your, you know, family of three, mortgage, bills to pay, and they come to you saying basically, I'm a very experienced recruiter. I have slogged my guts out for years for someone else. Actually, I now realize that for me to be happy in what I want to do, doing my own thing is going to be the right thing, but I have this massive financial commitment that I've built up over the years. What do we do? Type thing.
Yeah.
So, I guess the beauty of the model is that, you know, I would be, you know, they'd be hard pushed to find a recruiter that we couldn't support. It's just making sure that on a personal level, it all makes sense.
Yes, there's a balance, isn't it, you need to find in the mix. Your what you guys do isn't set in stone. That it's this. No. There's methodologies and ways you can get around things, for sure. I'm going to talk about a subject now that you might find hard to talk about. I love the setup to that.
It's failure. God. Right.
It's failure, Max, because I know you haven't done much of that in your life. You're pretty good.
I've never experienced it. So I wouldn't know. I've heard about it. That it happens.
So I get you see more than I do. I've seen my fair share of failure in my life, and especially businesses that have failed. From ventures that you guys get involved with, the ones, and it's bound to be one or two that have done this. What is the biggest reason for them to fail? Why are they not achieving what they wanted to set out to achieve?
Yeah, I think to say that over the last 16 years we haven't supported someone who it hasn't worked out, who unfortunately it's not worked out for them, would be wrong. Of course, it's happened. It happens all the time. Yeah. The number, fortunately, has gone down over the years, but it's still very much there. I think that obviously there's so many things that influence why it might not work out for someone. I think fundamentally, if you're looking at it coldly, this is cold, but if you're looking at it coldly, obviously, the reason these things don't work out is because they don't build. Now, I know that I can actually say that, but you know,
they're not making money.
So, you know, in the nicest way, they're not applying themselves. And I think, you know, because of the nature of the individuals that we tend to support, it's not because professionally they can't, because they've been doing it for donkey's years before.
Yeah.
It's because something within that shift has made them either, because we have seen this over the years and had very frank discussions with people about what they're doing, they've taken a back seat thinking that now they own their own business, things are just going to happen. Of course they're not.
Do you know, from 14 years in recruitment, the number one thing is the reason you don't bill is the absence of activity. That's the number one thing. If you do not have activity in your business, then you are not going to bill. Full stop.
Yep.
That's it. Attached to that is other reasons why. Motivation. You know, it can be all these things.
Yep.
But someone said on LBC Radio the other day that the number one reason businesses fail is because they don't market themselves properly. Again, that comes
to... Was that a marketer that said that there? Yeah.
It was a marketer.
I'm sorry, it was. Yeah. Might have been biased. Yeah,
I'm sort of biased. I get that. I get what they're trying to say. But to me, you know, when you see when people, I've had a few conversations in the recruiter's arms on LinkedIn, and people are struggling to make money, and I ask them, what do they do? How do they get themselves out there? What is the things they get up to? And that's at least. That is it. That's the problem. The lack of activity in what they do.
Yep.
So, yeah. Is there any kind of other crazy reasons why people fail?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So, I think we've obviously identified two, really. So, the lack of activity, i.e. you just don't bill, which I think goes back to that, either that misperception that this is easier than it actually is going to be and things are going to flop to them, or they just don't have the right motivations as to doing it, which means they're probably pushed to do it rather than pulled because they didn't want to in the first place. I think the other one, which, you know, we've seen a little bit more outside of the SSG network as opposed to in, but it still does happen. There are too many fixed overheads to these individuals. They're putting themselves under too much financial pressure within the business.
That's
let alone out of it. So, you know, we've had very, again, because of the beauty of it, very full and frank discussions with our guys sometimes about their spending habits in the early days. Ooh. Not because obviously they can I know you've really got to build up the rapport to be able to do it.
I'm not saying that in a negative or, but I'm just saying I agree with you, because the spending habits I've heard of some of them must have been best friends of Michael Gove 20 years ago, because you know what I'm saying. It's just ordinary, some of the stuff. I remember, God alive, it must have been about 2 years ago, when I got into to kind of where I got past that point of the first year and I was doing all right. And then someone phoned me up trying to sell me something. I think it was insurance. And we got chatting about business spend, because I was like, I can't afford that. That's ridiculous. And he was telling me then a story of a recruitment agency that he was dealing with. And they were being taken to court because they hadn't paid a VAT or tax bill for 2 years. And I said, well, what are they doing it? But they got a lovely Aston Martin DBS in the driveway and all this type of stuff. I was like, what the freaking hell? So, yeah, random story.
Well, it's, no, but, you know, obviously, as I'm sure you can imagine, we have conversations about accounts all the time. And that VAT question comes up all the time in terms of, what's yours? What is HMRC's? What should you do with that money when it comes in? instead of just having it sit there and think, oh, I could finance an Aston Martin with that. Yeah, fine.
Yeah. I just ignore it. I just put it in an account and ignore it and let.
always ignore it. Yeah, always ignore it. And also, it's kind of, I think it always then goes back to people's relationship with their own business in terms of probably the easiest ways to look at it. Yeah. Is if you were to look at this business as, right, okay. I'm simply just employed by ABC Recruitment. That's what I am. Yeah, I own it, but I am essentially employed. And therefore, I have a fixed salary that business is going to pay me. So regardless of how good this business goes in 1 month or, you know, if it has a little bit of a wobble in the next month, that business is always going to pay me, I don't know, $2,000 a month. Yeah. So that means that you never get yourself into these areas where you're just either taking too much money out of the business early doors and forgetting a little thing called HMRC, or you then have ridiculous spending habits within the business in the first 6-9 months. You expand too quickly, you have too many fixed overheads, and then you either oscillate between yourself and an 8-man office and 8 people, and now just yourself again, or 2 and then 1, and that creates that instability that you didn't want, or you just have too many fixed overheads that just means the easiest thing is just to close it, which again is such an upsetting thing to happen, because obviously those things are so easily
avoidable.
You don't have to do them. Yeah, avoidable. That's the word. There you go. Yeah.
That's all right. Don't worry. I haven't had enough coffee today to talk properly. I should have had an injection before this podcast. and that's the thing. The one thing I'll add to failure, especially being a business owner, is I fear it. I actually fear it, which keeps a healthy relationship with it. Because then I look at it and I think, right, if I do this, it's gonna fail. If I do this, it's gonna fail. Or I don't mind failing in certain things, but the loss of my business, the going into the ground, is my biggest fear of the business. So it protects me from it. Some people say you could learn, you know, failure is great, you learn from it. Yeah, I've had many of them in my time and I've learned from it. And what is created for me is this mindset that I need to circumnavigate. If it does happen, and I hope it never happens to me, but if it does happen, yeah, I'll learn from it. But it's nice to have that fear sometimes, I think. And it keeps you on your toes.
I think it keeps you on your toes because I think, you know, again, you can get too comfortable in it. And then you don't really know where you're going with it.
That's another, isn't it? The complacency. That's probably another failure reason as well, isn't it? The complacency.
I think dry spells happen all the time. Yeah. And I think it's trusting in a process. Again, it goes back to kind of, imagine if you were employed by this business, that business would expect you to have some sort of process in place. So have that process, stick to that process. And then when you're 3, 4, 5 years through it and you've navigated through those years, yeah, maybe then your relationship with the business might change. But in those early years, this is real. This is real.
yeah. Getting away from failure, let's talk about the ventures you guys support or even ones you're aware of out there as well, and their definition of success, especially to the people that want to start their own business. What does success look like to these guys?
It's very personal, isn't it? And I think the beauty is that everyone has a slightly different kind of relationship with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, to try and answer that question, you tend to, if I look at the types of individuals that we support, you kind of have three, this is putting them all in a box, so I don't mean to, but three types of individual, whereby you've got those guys who define success as them, it's them. They're going to do what they have to do to financially earn the money that they need to support their family. And then anything above that is fantastic. They know that.
that's me. I'm in that box. Yeah.
Which, you know, is one of those things that if we're looking at a very, 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 very good client for SSG, it is individuals like that, because you you know why they want to do it. They know where they need to be to ensure that. And really, they know it's themselves. And, you know, that their success is geared in the mental flexibility in terms of the financials, in terms of the autonomy. It's always geared in the same types of things. Yeah. So I think you have that type of individual. You then have the types of individuals that are a little bit more growth driven in the sense that they want a team around them for whatever reason it might be, whether they've built teams over the years and they love that process, or they're at a stage in their life where they don't have any sounds awful. They don't have anyone else around them, so they'd love to build something around them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I get you.
So, you know, some people look at that and you tend to look at maybe your 3 to 4 consultants around that individual. Yeah. And that's a very successful model. These businesses don't tend to ever look to sell, but they're very profitable if you have the right types of people in there for the individuals and also the owner.
Yeah.
And then you have the third type, which I think even in the early stage conversations that I would have with our guys, and obviously SSG would as well, is very clear what they want to do, which is build to then one day sell it. Which
I find them fascinating, by the way. Those ideas.
I think that's. I mean, why? Why? Is it in a good way or a bad way?
No, I find it's. There's no negativity towards it, by the way. I think it, I find it fascinating how they put a definitive shelf life on a business and say, "Well, when I get there, I'm selling it." How can I put it? It seems to be in vogue at the moment. It seems to be the reason why people go into business is to sell something. Whereas 20, 30, I might be old fashioned in my mindset, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, people went into business to have a business to live. Do you know what I mean? They created a business to pay them to live, to pay their mortgages, to do their stuff. Whereas you got these guys then, and that to me, that's, and it's not a wrong model, by the way, that entrepreneurial kind of sell a business model. It just seems to be the popular model at the moment.
I think because it's glamorized, isn't it? It absolutely is. And I think, you know, again, that's one of those things as one of the guys at the front end of SSG, you could shout from the rooftops about how fantastic start something for yourself is, paint this picture that it's the easiest thing to do and the best thing to do, and you can earn X, Y, Z, and you can do this and you can do that, and why don't you do it? Why wouldn't you, type thing? But that's completely wrong.
Yeah.
Because you appreciate that it's so, so hard. It's such a hard graft. And, you know, the people that genuinely build to then sell, quite rightfully, as you were saying, might put a superficial shelf life on it. The irony is they get there, they don't sell it. They don't. You know.
That's fascinating. So if you had to look at the split of all the businesses you guys run with at the moment, is that like a third, a third, a third, or is there one more than the other, or how does it look?
I would say it tends to lean more towards the first two than the third.
Yeah.
But I think I do genuinely think as well, because a lot of the people within that second model, i.e. a couple of people around them, might have said at the beginning they want to build and sell, but then they get to a stage whereby
it's comfy.
You know, they don't want to grow anymore. And you don't have to. And this is the beauty of it as well. People think that, or some people think that you need 20, 25 consultants around you to have a quote profitable business. Of course you don't.
Ooh, I can argue against that as well. Because I know one company in Birmingham, I'm more profitable than them, and I'm one and he's 20.
There you go. Absolutely.
It's, you know, if you look at profitability, then that is, it's, you know, I don't look at profitability. I look at, am I happy? Yes. Am I paying myself? Yes. And once you've turned it into something that's a regular job, I know that sounds crazy, regular job, you're in the right place. It's that bridge then that I want to get to the growth set, to grow in a team, to grow in that part of it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's you know, trying to put ideas and plans in place in order to do that.
I guess if you flip that on yourself, which I'm sure you've done 101 times, why haven't you grown yet?
Oh, that's a really good question. Because I've been really selfish these last 3 years, the last 3.5 years. I did have a plan, and it was going to go into play this year, but Brexit slowed it down. So I thought, well, you know, I don't need to do it now. No one's telling me to do it. I don't have to do it. And then when I feel a bit more comfortable to start investing money in people, then I will. So it was like, I'm going to just carry on being selfish. I can pay myself and enjoy my own company, doing my own business.
But that's, again, the beauty of this, isn't it? At the end of the day, like, you can be selfish, and who's to tell you not to be? Like, it really doesn't matter. You're not answering to anyone at the end of the day, as long as it's achieving those key things that everyone goes into this wanting, which obviously you've already identified for yourself. As long as it keeps ticking those boxes, then, you know, for want of a better word, then what's wrong?
I tell you something that I have learned, and it's connected to all that, is time frames, your expectation versus reality. And I expected to do something and I didn't achieve that, and I really beat myself up. And then the next time I looked at it and I went, right, this is what I expect to do, and if I don't achieve that, then here's plan B, here's plan C, here's, and people are thinking, oh, that's a bad idea. No, it just keeps the plan moving, it just keeps the business moving. You can't define it. Again, it's defined in the business. I can't get my head around it. Defining yourself as, I've got to achieve that. It hasn't happened. Right, I'm going to close it then.
Well, that's why, again, it's one of those things that, you know, very openly, whatever people talk about in the early stages of what they want to do before they actually start it, it's great to understand, but everyone knows that it's always going to change. And that's where that first year is important. And in the same way that they could get to the end of that first year and say, no, I need another year of navigating my way through it before I even think about things.
Yeah, I agree. I would say my first year, I didn't even think that I needed to do. I didn't even get near where I wanted to do, I should say. But the second year, I did. And the difference was my expectation changed. That was the difference. I was just...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, we obviously, one of the areas that we talked to all our guys about is how much they would... You know, how much you'd want to take out of the business in that first year, therefore how much you'd have to build to hit that target. And, you know, throughout the very direct conversations you have because of the relationship that you build, you end up always coming down around about the same number.
Yeah.
It's always kind of the same, and that's based on gut feel and also evidence over the years as well. Of course, you have your anomalies that spike a little bit higher or don't do as well, but it tends to sit around the same number.
Yeah, and it's not always good to tell about the anomalies that do extremely well, because then everyone gets a little bit kind of...
And it presents this, one guy did 250, but, you know, the majority don't.
Majority sit probably in their first year around about 80 to 100, if some of them even less than that, which is interesting.
So that kind of 80, 120 kind of window tends to be the sweet spot, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
For our guys, at least. Obviously, it might vary.
It'll vary, yeah. And then it's dependent on their sector and how long it takes to grow that sector. And there's loads of factors. So a bit of an open question, really. Do you need a company like SSG to support you in starting a business? Or what is the advantages of using you, and what is the disadvantage? Not disadvantage. What is the alternative?
I can talk about the disadvantages more than you can, I'm sure. No. I think it's a question that get posed a lot, not too much, but a little bit when you're kind of talking to individuals. And I guess the answer is always the same, in terms of, I'm not going to arrogantly sit here and suggest that this is the only way for a recruiter to start something for themselves. Of course it's not. Yeah. I mean, you know, we are very fortunate enough to support 200 odd companies at the moment, which means that obviously that is not a lot if you look at the number of agencies that start.
9,000? But I think, is it a year?
Yeah, something cheaper like that. Yeah, yeah. So maybe that's why the guys are breathing down my neck to do my job better.
Get those targets.
I think fundamentally it's always the same thing, in terms of it really depends on what this individual is kind of looking for. For example, you know, I've spoken to some fantastic recruiters on paper over the years, and in digging deeper into really what they want from a support network, if anything, the SSG model sometimes doesn't fit, because I guess the benefits of the SSG model tend to be more geared around, okay, you can essentially then feel like a recruiter working for a larger recruitment company than the one that you actually own, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you are your own entity, absolutely. Nothing to do with SSG in the nicest sense, but SSG essentially sit there as a support network in really every single area apart from the out-and-out recruitment. And some of the guys that I speak to, love that. That's exactly what they want. They know personally that that's going to fit with them, and they value the holistic support. They want to be able to bounce the ideas off people, and that's great. Equally, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and waste my time or someone else's time trying to shoehorn this into someone's plans when we all know it's not going to work.
It's not. It's, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at not using you guys. And I looked at
how dare you?
I looked at the costings. I looked at everything. And when I sat in front of, I think it was you day one. I sat in front of. I think it must have been you.
I sat in front of you many a time. I think it might have been me and Claire. I don't know. It was. I know for me personally, it was earlier doors than normal.
Yeah.
I think you were. You know. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I met your other boss, Dave, in a hotel, and he went through everything, and when I sat in front of you, I think it was yourself and Claire, I think it was, and I think it was, it might have been you asked me, why are you coming to us? And my brain was saying, because I
very really, aggressive.
Why are you coming to, not in those words, but why are you coming, yeah, why are you here? Why did you win in Newton? And I remember my brain saying, it's because I haven't got a fucking clue what is going on.
I've got no idea what I'm doing.
And then I think I blabbed out some bullshit about I needed support in this venture to grow the venture. But basically, that was the reason why I hadn't a clue. I'm going to be honest with you, 3.5 years on, I've learned a shed load of starting my own business, but I still need you guys to do what I want you to do. And that's the part of me that I can do it. I can now learn how to do my own accounts, but I don't want to do that. I could do my own website, but I don't want to do that. And this is a new trend that's happening in today in entrepreneurs, is give people the jobs and focus on what you should be doing. To get
absolutely,
don't need to be doing all these things, and that's why I use you guys, is because you do the stuff that I don't need to be doing, and it'll bog me down in what I should be doing. So, of course,
and again, you know, I don't want to come across as kind of biased in these things. Because, yeah, you could say, of course, I'm going to say that, but yeah, you know, it's kind of like a lot of the guys that we support, they know what they're fucking good at,
yeah,
they know what they're really, really good at, and they also know what. The majority of people aren't idiots, so they would be able to sit in a dark room and write down things that they feel they're going to need help with.
You know?
So it's not the fact that SSG identify people who have absolutely no idea what's up and what's down. It's the fact that we identify people that identify together those areas that are going to be important. So what I tend to do is I tend to say to our guys, right, get a blank piece of paper, write down all the things that you feel are going to be important to launch and then support this business that you want to build.
Yeah.
And now, 9 times out of 10, because either I'm horrendously arrogant or very positive in terms of SSG, I know that whatever these guys write down, SSG would be able to support them in doing it.
Yeah.
So then it's just a case of, okay, well, you know, this is the type of environment and the type of relationship we tend to have with our guys. Yeah. Is that going to fit with you? And if it does, brilliant. If it doesn't, then we don't want to support you in the same way that you don't want to be supported by us, in a very, very positive way.
Yeah,
go and do it on your own, and that's great.
And a lot of people don't realize, and if you don't mind me saying this, a lot of people don't realize most of the financial risk is on you guys at the beginning as well. So you job boards and setting up a website, going off and doing your company's house, doing all those administrational tasks that cost a shedload of money to do initially.
Well, and obviously, because the model is geared around, look, we don't earn money. We don't take any money, for want of a better word, from the ventures that we support until they start making money for themselves. So that's when it goes back to those sectors, doesn't it? There are some sectors that the gestation periods are months. So you know, supporting these companies and hoping that these guys do what they say they're going
to
do.
And that comes back to when I said earlier on about your personal budget and how much can you afford and what you've saved and then covering you for that time. And for the listeners, I made my first placement in the first 6 weeks, but I didn't see the invoice for month six, I think it was.
That's because your account team and your credit controller so bad. But yeah.
Yeah, it was terrible. I remember saying about this, and I remember I didn't realize you guys did my credit control until I told you to. You can do my credit. And it was sold within a week. Yeah. It was sold in a week.
But again, it's one of those things that, you know, because we're not going to. Because we're not onerous on our guys in terms of, look, if you want to do your credit control, do your credit control. It doesn't matter to us.
Yeah.
But, you know, our guys would have to be idiots not to know how to do it. because they've done it for so long. And yeah, they're not exactly. idiots. I know they're
no,
not.
They're, no,
I mean, I am, but I know they're not.
Yeah, but don't tell everyone that.
Yeah. Don't say it virally on a podcast, Max. You're an idiot.
Yeah, no, don't worry about that. Don't worry. I'll edit
virally,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. hashtag Max
yeah.
idiot. I guess, I think I got a couple more thoughts or questions to ask you. The future of recruitment.
Absolutely.
And... Actually, it's probably a really good question to ask. Are you finding, because there's there's some people in the recruitment industry that don't like people like me, the solopreneurs, the entrepreneurs to set up on their own, because we're a real threat. We do things quicker and cheaper. That's what I believe, anyway. But we don't really do them that cheap. It's about the same price. But are you finding that there's this is a massive growth sector now because it's really trendy with Ubers and all this lot of stuff that's happening on the other side of the market? Are you finding that it's a growth market?
I think it certainly is. Yeah, I mean, fortunately over the years it always gradually has, and I don't know whether that's just because of the market or the fact that SSG might have just got a little bit better at what we do over the years, so you just grow. But certainly, It's a one that we talk about internally all the time. There is never a lack of recruiters that want to start something for themselves. There is always, obviously, those people that would fit a model like this and wouldn't. I think naturally you see people moving towards that slightly more SME boutique feel, of course, especially with, I mean, obviously it's another podcast, of course, but rise of recruitment and the personal brand that goes with that and the way that people market themselves and actually kind of chucks that whole idea in terms of how important is the brand to people and what is it kind of looking like. Because if we talk to our guys about the creative arm of their business, a lot of our guys aren't really fussed about the actual brand. They're fussed about the autonomy that they can have to then present their own personal brand in the way that might have been restricted at their current
really good, because I've made this comment many a times on LinkedIn of late. I'm seeing some amazing content starting to happen now on LinkedIn from not just the recruitment industry but engineering companies now. It's extraordinary.
Oh really?
Yeah, they're getting the video out and they're showing their products, how they're making it, and they show, you know, putting it out on LinkedIn, getting loads of likes and follows, and they're probably going to get some work from that as well. And then you got a really good guy, Mark Gaisford, who's doing awesome videos. I'm hopefully going to get him on a podcast. I haven't asked him yet. Hopefully. And Liv as well, hopefully, is his second in command there. And his awesome videos. But they're all coming from small businesses. They're all coming from SME boutiques because they get it, because they haven't got that restriction of social media policies that are shoved on your shoulders from day one. And your LinkedIn is controlled by the corporate recruiter, the man.
there's two interesting bits about that. I'll write the second one down because otherwise I won't talk about it. The first one is, as I'm sure you can imagine, obviously contact some of the individuals that we're looking to support through LinkedIn. So I remember in the early days, don't tend to get it as much anymore, but in the early days I would send a message to somebody at some company and they wouldn't reply. Their very grumpy line manager would reply. Some literally horrendous kind of waffle. Or I've had it once where a guy's rung me up and told me why I shouldn't be asking his guys to start their own business. They're perfectly happy here. How dare you?
Wow.
And obviously, what kills me is at the very beginning, obviously, you're thinking, oh shit, oh God. Because you're not quite sure whether you haven't had exposure to that. Obviously, now you tell them a couple of things, obviously. But
yeah,
it's kind of one of those things that, funnily enough, I don't see a lot of that. And I think maybe that's potentially because people are a little bit more personal brand pro. So therefore, they're going to be taking their LinkedIn away from their company and saying, look, this is mine. I'm going to work on your behalf. Of course I am.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. I mean, there are then those companies, which obviously, I'm not going to name them, of course, but there are those companies that you see on LinkedIn that every single one of them is now making video. Same way, same format. Talking about the same thing, and it's like, okay, that's business brand. And of course it is, but it's still not personal brand.
It's not personal. It's me.
No.
Me, my business. It's not about you, mate. Yeah. No one gives a shit.
Well, there was that video quite recently on LinkedIn that was talking about honestly, no one cares what you do. Everyone wants to know a little bit about your vulnerabilities and your story. And that's why when I talk to our guys about, look, you're now working for yourself. There's so much content there that if you wanted just to video yourself every single week and just have a 5-minute debrief about, right, this is what's been good. This is what's been horrendous. What's really pissed me off is this. What's really gone well is this.
Yeah.
So that then people are even more aware of, okay, from the outside looking in, starting your own business is really glamorous, but what does it actually entail?
Yeah.
And then there you go.
And I think that is the missing link when it comes to marketing you, your company, is that, you know, you're not selling Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola sells Coca-Cola. You're selling you. You're, especially in recruitment, you're selling you as a personality, you as a person. And you can talk about yourself all day long. But if you talk about things people want to hear, then you'll have a more engagement for what you do. There was a real good example of that quite recently. It's gone right out my bloody head.
It's gone right out my head. Was it a video? Because I think it's the same one that I saw. I think it was I can't remember.
And
don't want to get the name wrong.
even Charlotte, which is the last podcast I did, if you want to listen to it. even Charlotte's video.
Actually. I will just leave, mate.
I know. But even Charlotte's video, that's why I did that podcast with her. Listen to it. even her video, even her, what she did and how she did it, and it was honesty. It was open. It was raw. It was you know, and it wasn't. I do edit a lot of my videos with graphics and music and stuff. But I get that. I get that kind of that raw feel, and people they get attracted to it, and they want to hear more because this is why we do podcasts. People want to hear more. They want to empathize and be spoken to about.
I think that's right, Mark. I don't think that one's right. Yeah, go on. Yeah. Try again.
They want to take two. Do they want to be spoken to? Basically, they want. They don't want to hear. You know, this. Remember that one? That video with the guys in the chinos walking to the aeroplane. You know.
Do I remember it?
Yeah.
Do I remember it?
Does anyone not forget that one? But those
I was
guys.
There. No. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah, you were the guy on the left, didn't it?
The chief. Oh, it was the guy on the left, yeah.
Yeah.
Small calf.
Yeah.
Sorry, small calf.
You skip leg day, Max, I know you do.
Yeah, that's probably it, yeah.
And that wasn't about anyone, that was about them. No one gives a shit about that. No one cares about that. And that's the failings of that. And we've just gone completely off on a tangent of the future of recruitment. But maybe it is the future of recruitment then. Is that personal, like footballers. So you play for Chelsea, but you are a footballer that's well known in the marketplace. Well, you know, your brand, like David Beckham was, and you know what I mean? And maybe recruiters could become not like footballers, but you get where I'm going with that. It's like you're a personal brand in a bigger brand.
I think, yeah. And I think sometimes, you know, it's people's realization of that, that then kind of pushes them to maybe look at doing something for themselves because they don't feel as valued as they feel they should be.
Yeah,
where they are, and that's nothing wrong with the employer. It's just maybe a mismatch in terms of the environment that we kind of find ourselves in now, which I think will only just develop when it, of course, it will. And that's the reason why you have podcasts like this, because you would hope if anyone has been, you know, if anyone's bored enough to get to the end of this podcast,
yeah,
they'll have, if they get to this bit.
I'm not going to cut this down because I think there's a lot of information that will span over someone's commute at least for 3 days.
Yeah, let's keep going back with the fools. But I think the big boys are always going to be there. Of course they are. It's naturally going to be exactly how it is now. Just growing, really, isn't it?
I think it is. It's going to continue to grow, and as hopefully Brexit gets solved and where we sit in the world as a country, I think our horizons will expand, and the type of recruitment company will expand with those horizons. So there's, it's people said the golden age was the 90s, and then someone said the golden age was just before the recession. I think we're coming to a different age now, like a technical age, a new evolution for the industry.
If you only look back maybe 2 years, it's obviously changed so much within those 2 years. I don't think video was really, if we look back at maybe 2016, 2017, so 2016, 2017, video wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
And I think it won't be for everyone. If video is not for you, then it's not for you. You won't do it. But I definitely think people need to engage more in the audience, target audience out there on whatever platform they feel comfortable doing that, or where their clients and candidates are.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Knowing that you are the content, and there are so many avenues. Not everyone has to do video. Not everyone has to do podcast. You might be a phenomenal writer, and therefore blog is your thing.
You look at Mitch Sullivan. He doesn't do video. And look how popular he is just from writing, because he's a fantastic writer, though. But then you look at the other side of the coin, Mark Gacewood, with his, and he does video, and he's got a massive following now from what he does. So it's finding that niche and finding your voice and however that platform works for you. But you've got to do something. That's the point. You've got to do something, whatever that is, that will help you in the future. And on that note, the poor listeners hearing us for an hour and a half. Is it? No, it's not that long.
I'm so sorry.
We had a lot to go through. Starting a business is not an hour's conversation on the podcast. There's a lot more to it, but hopefully we touched upon most of the points there. So
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So Max, thank you very much for this.
Thank you.
Extremely informative. And you can, I'll pay you later. All right.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah. And I want to get paid more than Charlotte, and I want to get plugged more than Charlotte as well.
Yeah, that means no. That's two packets of Haribo.
Tam Fastics are my favourite, but you know, you already know that. But yeah, go on. but yeah, no, obviously, thank you very much for having me on. And if anyone's still listening, then good on you.
Yeah, and if you do want to have a conversation with Max about what SSG can do and how to start a business. I'm sure you're quite open just to talk about starting a business, aren't you, Max?
Absolutely. I mean, I annoy my partner enough by talking at her about it all the time. So so please do her a favour. Absolutely. All the normal places, and then away we go.
Yeah, I'll start an appeal now to talk to Max so his partner doesn't
leave him.
Take it easy, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Bye bye. Well, I guess if you've got this far, well done. You deserve a medal. That was a long podcast. I try not to get them that long, but there was so much information to talk about recruitment, starting a business, and everything else around it that surrounds it, because I know where it's like. I was there over 3.5 years ago, working it all out. How the hell do I do it? Where do I go? Who do I speak to? So I thought I'd pay back to the system and show people, you know, there's one guy, Max Jones. Go and speak to him. He can tell you all about it. Come speak to me even. I give you warts and all on that one. So I don't mind doing that. So yeah, thank you very much for listening this far. And I hope you stick around for the next podcast that I have done. Hopefully, it'll be coming out soon. Take it easy. Bye-bye.